'Twas the night before Christmas, and all through the house, not a creature was stirring, not even a mouse.
In my mind, I want you to be free. What I say, we wish you a
Merry Christmas
to
each one of you.
Silent night, holy night, all is calm, all is bright,
round yon virgin, mother and child.
Oh,
This is Chicago's finest internet radio show, making a world a better place, one show at a time. The George Warner Jr. Show is now on the air. Take it away, Dad.
All right, thank you. Thank you so much, and welcome to the George Wilder Jr. Show on Block Talk Radio right here in the city of Chicago. We're back on the air after being off for 3 days. We take off for 3 days every week because I'm just on 4 days a week, Monday through Thursday, starting from 6 o'clock to 7:30, sometimes 8, depends on how the show is going. All right, welcome to the George Wilder Jr. Show. I'm just giddy, folks, for some reason. All right, the main news, folks, and you may know it well than I. It's cold. It is brutally cold. It is a deep freeze across America. And these people and these meteorologists are saying that the polar vortex has returned. Wow. It is cold, folks. It is. And if you're out there, you're bundling up. If you don't have to be out there, then do not go out there, folks. It is freezing. I mean, I was out there earlier today and I froze my ass off. And you will freeze your ass off if you go out there just to be out there. This cold is dangerous. It's very, very dangerous. It's something you don't play with. You want to dress up in layers. You want to make sure that you cover from head to toe. It's no time to look cute and to be handsome. You have to cover your head, your ears. This is no joke. It is cold. And right now in Chicago, it's 16 degrees. Okay. It's 16 and they're saying it's going to be 19 tomorrow, but you know, those numbers can change, you know, but it is cold. No matter what the numbers are, we are in a deep freeze. It reminds me of that novel I've written, The Deep Freeze, The Groove Continues, but it has, I talk about the cold in that novel also, but because, you know, it is really, really, really cold. So you want to really take care of yourself because, you know, you are important. You are needed. You are loved. I'm pretty sure you have loved ones that care about you. And they would probably also tell you to cover up, bundle up when you go out there. And if you don't have to be out there, then don't go. Don't go. But I do know a lot of people have to go to work. A lot of people actually work out in the cold. But and if you do that, you know, like I just got through saying, bundle up. It is cold, folks. It is no joke. And it's cold across America. We're getting this stuff early, because officially, by the calendar, it's not even winter yet. It's still fall. So this is coming unprecedented. And, you know, we're still, you wonder what winter is actually going to be about. Because I've always considered December winter anyway. Anytime it's December, it's winter to me, you know. But by the calendar, it's still fall. And it doesn't feel like fall. This is cold weather. This is January, February weather that we're having in December, which is, as I just got through saying, it is not fall yet. Fall doesn't happen, I believe, until the 21st of December. Next week, okay? But still in all, bundle up. This is nothing to play with. It's just dangerously cold, and that's no lie. So remember, you've heard it from the George Wilder Jr. Show, to cover up, bundle up. It's dangerously cold, and they say it's going to get even worse as the week progresses. And you've been listening to the George Wilder Jr. Show. We're all about making the world a better place. We can always make the world a better place by putting on enough clothes when we go outside. But if you don't have to be out there, don't go. You know, a lot of people say, well, I got to get out of the house. I'm tired of staying in the house. Well, then if you go out there, you better have somewhere to go. And those for those of you who are homeless, there are lots of warming centers around town that you can go to keep warm. You don't have to stay out there and freeze your ass off. I mean, I've seen people out there today standing on the corner, bunny, or sitting out there. You better get your asses up. You're going to freeze because this weather is no joke. There's all kind of warming centers you can go to. The libraries, city centers, all kinds of places around town in Chicago, and I'm pretty sure all around the United States where the homeless can go to get warm. And there will even be city patrols out on the street looking for those who are out on the street during this cold blast to try to get them to somewhere where it's warm and safe. Because this is no joke. You see, I'm on this, talking about this for quite a bit because it's serious. You just don't realize how many people freeze to death out there in the cold in the city of Chicago and elsewhere. And that's something we do not want because a lot of homeless people do not like shelters. They do not, you know, anything that has to do with indoors, they don't want. Just a certain segment and a certain percentage. Most of the homeless population out there, they want to get the hell out of the cold and the snow. But you've got some people who are probably mentally challenged who would want to stay out there and freeze their butts off, and they wind up freezing to death. And the city does not want that. The George Wilder Jr. Show does not want that. You know, so get out of the goddamn cold, folks. It is just brutal. Okay, that's I guess that's enough. But we'll be talking about the cold throughout this episode. And because it's dangerous. I'm in my studio and I'm looking out on the window. I'm looking out of the window here, and it is snow. It's cold. It's ice on the ground. It's slippery. And for the seniors out here and the elderly, you guys, you really got to be careful if you have to be out there. If you don't have to be out there, then do not go. You know, if you don't have to be, but there's people who have to be out there. They may be just going to the store, you know, buying food or whatever, coming home from work, going to work, coming from school, going to school. But you have, as long as you have something that's important to do and you got to be out there, get in and get out, you know, but if you don't have to be out, don't go. If you're thinking about just walking around the corner because you want to get some exercise, you better walk back and forth in your house or your apartment, and you can get just as much exercise being inside of a warm place because it is cold. Okay, you've been listening to the George Wilder Jr. Show on Blog Talk Radio, and I am just so excited to be back on the air, you know, because, you know, we take time off too. I mean, we have to take time off too to regenerate and do some writing. All right, what do we have here besides the cold? As if there's anything else to talk about but the cold, right? All right, my young author Lucy B is scheduled to be on the show today, and we're going to have a lot of commentary. And we're just going to be talking. What can I say? 347-857-1762. The George Wilder Jr. Show is now on the air. And check out my short story, Hit Me and You Dies. Some people have been actually downloading that book, if you want to call it a book, Kindle ebook in droves. I mean, I'm getting thousands and thousands of downloads on it, you know, so it's a good book. It's a good story. It's a good premise. And I think people are enjoying it. Okay. It's called Hit Me and You Die. Believe me, it's just plain old entertaining. It's fiction. It's something different. So you check that out. I have my link to my Amazon page, and you can just on here, and you can just click and just go right to it. And then most importantly, ladies and gentlemen, it's free. You don't have to pay for it. If you have a Kindle or some sort of reading device on your phone or computer or tablet, you can download it for free and you can read it right there. It's a short read, but it's a potent, it's a read that will stay with you forever. And you would want to reread it and reread it again, because some of the things there you just can't believe. And it's action. It's action. It's called Hit Me and You Die. Also, I'm working on a lot of other material that's coming up for 2017. Brand new stuff, man. Brand new stuff for 2016. It's fun. I enjoy it. It's entertaining. That's all it is. So don't hold me. George doing is writing that junk. That damn junk. Everything that I write, you can learn something from. So it's not all junk, and it's fun. And that's what people want. People want something that can take them away from reality for a while. And that's why that's what my writing does, take you away from reality, you know, bills and, you know, stuff like that. So check that stuff out. www.amazon.com/author/G Wilder, Amazon. That's my Amazon page. All right. Tune to the George Wilder Jr. Show on Block Talk Radio. And here is Brian Bull. Can we get that? Is it working?
My son has been arrested for walking while black. I get it.
A lot of sons have been arrested.
Yeah, I get it. It doesn't make me, you know, you can't buy your way out of this one. You can't educate your way out of it.
It's just happening too much, or at least we know about it now.
It's always happened. We see more evidence of it. And too often people still are inclined to say, well, if he'd had a different attitude, well, if he hadn't been driving, well, if he hadn't been this, if he hadn't been that, almost as if the victim is partially to blame. You know, in the case of Garner, well, he shouldn't have resisted. In the case of Brown, well, where was he? In the case of Trayvon, well, he had a hood on, you know, and in the case of whoever, you know, in case of Sandra Bland, you know, well, her attitude was better. It's like, no, stop. This has nothing to do with the victims. This has everything to do with the culture of demeaning a person of color. And there is no justification for a society where my son has a far greater chance of being stopped, held, killed than your son, simply because he's black.
All right, back in Chicago, we have a Governor Bruce Rauner. This guy, I mean, he's been in office for 3 years. And do you know he has nothing whatsoever to say he has accomplished for the people of Illinois? Nothing. This guy has been one big fucking failure. He has done nothing for the state of Illinois. He's all over the television blaming other people, blaming the legislature, blaming Michael Madigan, who's the leader of the the leader of the House of Representatives in Illinois. He's blaming so many people. This guy has done nothing but hurt Illinois. He wants to destroy it, rebuild it, and call it Raunersville. He's another dictator. He wants, you know, he wants to control everything. He wants his hands on everything. And the Democrats will not let him. And I applaud them for that. Because he just wants to reshape Illinois in his image. And I'm going to say that. He does. He has not done jack for the state of Illinois. If he's done anything, he's hurt Illinois by cutting vital programs for seniors, for the disabled, for the hungry, for the poor, for the working poor, for children. He's done all the backward ass things. He's done nothing He's done nothing to move Illinois forward, backwards, and he's blaming other people because they don't want to accept his reforms. A lot of people around in Illinois, they don't know what the hell reforms mean. Reforms mean he wants to do something drastic, like taking away your collective bargaining, busting up your unions. He wants to go for term limits. He wants, and the Illinois legislature have told him many times that they can discuss those things after they get a budget, after there's a budget. But he will not budge on getting a full budget for the state of Illinois. 3 years without an entire budget. We have something called the stopgap budget, which is going to end next month, January 2017. And once that has expired, we will not have a budget. We're going into 3 years without a budget. And the Illinois state constitution reads that the Illinois governor, his responsibility is to have a budget in place annually. This guy is not doing it. By not following the constitution of Illinois, he's breaking the law. He's breaking constitutional law. Where are the handcuffs? This guy is corrupt. This guy's breaking the law. He's not following, and he's going around blaming everybody. And you'd be surprised at all the people who are clapping and praising him. For what? He hasn't done a goddamn thing. Nothing has he done. He's been a complete failure. But you know what? You get all kind of people out there, nutty people, people who are unreasonable, people who are like him, rich and thinks like him, you know, they're going to be on his side because you got a lot of racist people, white supremacists, people who don't give a damn about nothing or no one else. But Browner has to realize something. He's running. He wants to run for a second term. He wants to do this. 2018. He's not going to get there. You want people to vote for you, then you better give them something. Nobody's going to give you something for nothing. You know, and he's talking a good game. You almost believe what he says, but you have to watch what he does and what he doesn't do. Browner is just trying to play the field out here. He's trying to make you think that he's going to do this for you, do that for you, but what he's trying to do is to blame once the state goes under, which he's going to take it under, and he's going to blame the Democrats because this is a blue state. Democrats control the legislature in Illinois. He's a Republican governor. They control it. He can't do anything without them. Or he can do it. He can have his executive powers. He can write stuff in, and that's what he's been doing. You know, writing, cutting programs just by using his ink pen, executive authority. But some things he cannot get done without the inclusion of the legislature. And these guys are far apart. And it's just imminent that these guys do not like each other. It's evident that they don't like each other. So if the governor doesn't like the state legislature, and the state legislature does not like the governor, the people are fucked. We're in the middle of this, and we're screwed because these jackasses can't seem to get it together. But I am a little bit more against what the governor is trying to do, and I know what he's trying to do, and most of us do. There's some people who don't know what he's trying to do because they're not paying attention to what's going on. But like I said before, this guy is... What he's trying to do is basically tear down Illinois, blame other people for it, and then rebuild it in somewhat in his own image. Rebuild Illinois to his way of liking, put it that way, to his way of liking. It'll be Rounersville. Even if he runs in 2018 and wins, He can only do two terms in office as governor. But this guy is looking at the big picture. He wants to be president of the United States. He wants to be a big player in politics, even if he doesn't get elected for a second time. he wants to make sure that he can use his money, his expertise or whatever it is, because he doesn't have it because for office before. He has no experience, but he thinks he does. And the people, he's a fast talker. He's a good talker. He sounds good when he talks. And that's what moves people. The good talkers, the people who can give great speeches, use big words. You know, that's what people are fooled on when voting for a candidate. You can't vote for a candidate because they sound good when they talk. You have to look at their actions, what they've done, because politicians lie like dogs. You know, they lie like dogs, and so many people just eat it up. And that's a damn shame. But I do believe that in the state of Illinois, Rauner doesn't have a ghost of a chance to win a second term. He may even be impeached before he even runs for a second term or thrown out of office, because he is defying the Illinois Constitution that says Illinois must have a budget. We haven't had a budget in 3 years. And he's blaming other people for it when he is the culprit. And there are so many people out there who are believing that he's not to blame. But I think the majority of the people in Illinois knows who to blame, especially state workers, people's paychecks who he's trying to screw with. Because if you try and mess with somebody's union and they want their union, then you're messing with their paycheck. You're messing with their jobs. And that's what he wants to do. He wants to bust these unions wide open. That's one of the reasons why he doesn't like Chicago public schools, because they're loaded with union workers, and he can't stand it. And the majority of union workers are vote Democratic. He can't stand it. He can't stand that Michael Madigan actually controls Illinois, not Bruce Rauner, even though Rauner is the governor. Mike Madigan controls Illinois, and he can't stand it. This guy is going around trying to turn Illinoisans against Michael Madigan. Mike Madigan has been in office for over 30, 40 years, and he's trying to get people to turn against Michael Madigan. How can he do that when his ass don't even have any kind of experience as a politician? He's faking it. He's totally faking it. So 2018, we got to get this guy out of office. We got to tell him that we don't want a do-nothing governor, because that's just what he is in terms of trying to blame other people because he wants power, because he can't get the power he wants. So he's pissed off. He's holding the state hostage. He's holding people hostage because until he gets what he wants. That's something. All right. You've been listening to the George Wilder Jr. Show on Blog Talk Radio, folks. Thanks for tuning in. It's a cold night in Chicago. I hope it's warm where you are, but I'm hearing that it's cold all over America. Wow. All right. You've been listening to the George Wilder Jr. Show. I think we have a caller on the line. Let's go and see what's up. All right. You're on the George Wilder Jr. Show. I know you heard my rant, right? Yeah. Sometimes it happens that way. All right, Lucy B.
Yes.
All right. Tell my audience a little bit about yourself and why are you here. We know that you're an author, so tell us a few things about yourself.
Well, I'm okay. A new author. Hello, everyone out there. My name is Lucy B. Linder. I am 49 years old, and I'm a native New Yorker. And I am, yes, a newly found author of Big Bottom Blues. I actually own Lucy B. Jumpin' Fun Fitness, which is a jump rope gym and program for kids in New York and Stockholm, Sweden, where I'm calling you from. I'm also the creator of SBG by Lucy B, Girl Empowerment Brand, and team coach for Team Shiro, which is a new jumper team that I hear in Stockholm. But I guess you're going to be talking about my book tonight.
That's up to you. I like the title. The title is what? Big Bottom Blues?
Yeah, Big Bottom Blues. It kind of throws people off, but
yeah,
it's
did
not
throw,
about what
it,
one would expect.
But you know what? It threw me off a little bit because I... Hello? Are you there?
Yes,
hello?
Hi.
You dropped
yeah,
your
I'm
phone?
Here. Mm-hmm. Yes.
Okay.
No, I can hear you.
Okay. Big Bottom Blues, it did throw me off a little bit because it reminded me of a song years ago called Bell Bottom Blues. So, and then I start Bell Bottom
oh,
Blues.
Wow.
But then I looked at it again. I said, uh-oh. I said,
no, not Bell.
I don't think that's it.
Big
I said,
bottom.
I said, uh-oh. Okay, explain what you're talking about when you say Big Bottom Blues. And we have kids
yeah,
listen to the show.
The Big Bottom Blues is a book that I have written. It was published this past May. It's actually my story and experience of childhood sexual abuse by the hands of my brother. And it is a very painful, painful story. The book is very raw, it's very intense, and I actually say it and write it as it happened. And I go through, the book talks about issues that I have gone through as a child, as a teenager, and as an adult, you know, from self-hate, self-loathing because of the rape and the abuse, to finding myself up. So it has been a journey, a progression, if you will, into loving myself as, you know, Lucy B, the woman, the newfound woman, the woman who loves herself now, who is separate from what had happened to her in the past.
So this is kind of like your autobiography. You're writing about yourself. You're writing about experiences,
yes.
Your experience that happened
yeah,
in the past.
Okay. Yeah. It's about the childhood sexual abuse that I
mm-hmm.
home with my brother. It happened for 7 years. I was raped by my brother in my home.
Wow.
And for seven whole years, it started when I was 5, he was 14. For 7 years, I lived in terror, in horror. I was traumatized beyond what you can believe. For 7 years, I'm pretty much a mute. At the age of 11, I finally found the courage to speak up and tell someone what had happened to me. And that was a nun and a priest at my elementary Catholic school. And what happened then is an issue of itself, because when my mother got hold of this information of what my brother had done, you know, you'd think that, you know, she would be very supportive and, but that's not what happened. That's not what happened. My mom actually did not believe this happened. And it was turned on me, the child. And my brother was made to be the victim because I outed the family secret. And so the book talks about my reaction to that and how I was affected by it. And this is something that affects millions of survivors of childhood sexual abuse. I mean, this is not just a me story. I always say I've written this book for every. Mm-hmm. Yeah,
I was going to say
I've written this book for every child.
I was going to say, it happens. It's happening now as we speak. If you want to really know about it, child sexual assault.
Yeah.
It's unusual when you talk about that it was a relative, a sibling. I mean, that much.
Yeah. Well, I will tell you something, though. It more often than not, you know, the perpetrators are known. We know our perpetrators, like 85% of the time, we know who it is. And often mm-hmm. it's a family friend or it's a relative. And that's
okay.
what makes this so horrible. It's insidious. And
yeah,
it's something that if people have such an issue of talking about this, and because it makes them uncomfortable, uneasy, it's a taboo subject. And, you know, I've run into some negative feedback. And I was told, you know, you shouldn't really talk about this. This is not something that's behind you. Get over it. But you don't get over something like that. In order to heal, in order to heal yourself and heal others who are going through this, you have to speak about it. People are too afraid to talk about things that are, this exists. This exists right under our nose, and we have to do something about it. And that's the reason why I wrote this book. Right. Exactly. And I will tell you something else, and I'm going to go deep here because I hope I don't offend anyone. One of the reasons why I wanted to speak on your show is because I am an African American Caribbean descent woman. Okay, my family's from the Caribbean, and a lot of the time, the topic of sexual abuse is something that you just don't talk about. I mean, and that's what has happened to me. Don't talk about you. You will be ostracized. You'll be criticized and judged, and basically shunned. This is not, whether it happens, it's like, you know, you swallow it and you just move on. You don't just move on. You are affected for the rest of your life. You know, many a times, you know, survivors are not okay. You've got over 60 million adults living in the United States right now, over 60 million who have been affected by childhood sexual abuse, 60 million lives negatively impacted in various ways, from alcoholism, drugs, you know, a lot of them have eating disorders, you know, post-traumatic stress disorder, on and on. A suicidal tendencies, a suicide, it's crazy. It affects your life like you can't imagine. And that's the reason why I said I choose to be the voice and the face for those who cannot come out the closet and speak their story. Because I have to be the one to do it, because I've suffered for 7 years. I became a mute. I mean, what had happened to me in my home is unbelievable. And then when it was known, it was flipped on me. And I couldn't understand. So I grew up with so much anger, so much shame, so much guilt. You know, it took me over 40 years to be able to tell my story, because my brother terrorized me. If I had said anything during those 7 years, he would kill me. And so, or if I said something to my mom, he would kill my mom. And so this is what I heard for seven years. So, you know, I had to unlearn so many things. And I'm speaking not just to you. I'm speaking to every single survivor out there. There are many of us out there who've gone through experiences, can't speak, who are too afraid to say because they're afraid of being judged or being criticized. And I've gone through it. 40 years I've been afraid to speak. But I'm speaking now. I wrote my book and I came out with it. It's a short book. It's like 64 pages. But my God, it's raw and it's intense. And it's in your face, and I mean no words. I tell it like it is. Yep.
Lucy, you're breaking up.
Are you there?
I'm here. I'm here. You can hear me, but does it sound like you're breaking up? Yeah. Yeah.
No, not at all.
You sound very emotional. I mean, this stuff is—it's still with you somehow.
Well, the thing is, it's always with you. I think because I had to, when I wrote the book, I had to relive my story all over again. And I'll be honest, some of us are very calm when we talk about this. With me, I tend to be an emotional person, anyways. But this topic does bring up certain things in me, and it's just, I think of late I've met some people who've said that this is not a good thing that I'm talking about it, and I think
it's great. Don't let people
I think it's wonderful.
You're right to speak out. That would teach other people to speak out,
right? But that's the whole point, you know. By my speaking out, by my telling my story, other people will have the courage to tell theirs. And I think, and again, most, you know, some people express themselves differently. With me, I need people to hear me and to understand my passion and to understand my feelings, because you can't be calm and rational about something as horrible as being raped by a family member. I mean, not, it never goes away. Yes, I have healed, but I could also say that I'm still in the process of healing because I'm still discovering things about myself. You know, there are some days when, you know, I don't feel so great because the memories come back up. The memories don't just disappear. They're there. Sometimes, and I work with children, and sometimes children may say certain things to me that may trigger, you know, I may see something that may trigger. And so it's a daily process of healing. And this is something I want to tell everyone, you know, find your peace, find your healing in some way. Like for me, I found my healing through writing. I find it in nature. I spend a lot of my time in the forest, you know, under a tree, and I write, and I meditate, but I really close my eyes and I really get centered with myself and get in touch with who I am. And that's how I found my healing. And I would love other people to do the same if they could.
It sounds like a great story, a great book, and I'm pretty sure you're a great person. And I do agree with you. The memories never leave you. Even if you don't think about it constantly, they're always there. Sometimes when you're alone and you're kind of isolated, those memories sneak back into your consciousness, and
absolutely,
you know, and it was traumatic. So, what happened to your brother? Did he ever pay for his crimes?
Well, let's see. I think I guess God took care of that for me. I was 25 years old. So mind you, when at 11 years old, when I disclosed this to my mom did not believe this for a very, very long time. My brother lied and said that I was lying. So I had I was basically lynched by my family by saying, you know, that you died.
Yeah.
I mean, Lucy, you should not have lied on your brother. It was a hell for me. And so at the age of 25, I remember I got a phone call from my mom one evening, and she said, listen, you know what? Your brother finally told the truth. You know, I was 25 years old, mind you. And she's like, now I get the call now.
So he admits it.
I was not happy. I wasn't happy. Yeah, he admitted it, that he did rape me, and he did rape everything that I did say happened. But you know what? It was a little bit too late for me, because I told my mom, so now you believe me. It's a little bit late. I'm very sorry. And I believe at that point I said, I really can't speak to you, Mom. I hung up the phone. And that's exactly what happened. And our relationship had deteriorated from there because I held on to so much anger, you know, not being believed. And that's one of the things too, Gary. The thing is, when a child says that they're being hurt or something is wrong, a parent must listen. You have to believe that child, because by not believing, you can negatively impact that child's life forever. And when I say child, an adult, you are impacted. And you must believe your children when they tell you something is wrong. Or if you suspect something is wrong, take action. In my case, when these things were happening, I tried to tell my mom that things were going on in the house. She didn't believe me. And so I built up a wall of, I guess, anger. I was not very happy. And it led to a lot of, you know, sadness and loneliness in my life, you know, and not feeling connected to family and whatnot, you know. And I never felt like I did have family because they were, you know, quote unquote, against me until the truth came out. And when I was 26, it was a year later, 26, my brother wrote me this 13-page apology. 13 pages, I mean, full of apologies. I'm sorry, I wrecked your life, blah, blah, blah. Well, on each of those pages, I wrote, apology not accepted. And I mailed them the letter back. I mean, that's how I dealt
Good
with
for
it.
You.
And after that, I advised myself that I would not, you know, even think about it anymore. But that's impossible. Because now you are finally validated, but it's too late. You know, it's too late. So now I have to learn how to undo all the things that was done to me.
Okay, Lucy,
so these are the kind of
do you have
things in the book? Yes.
Lucy, do you have your book with you? Can you read us an excerpt?
Absolutely. I'm trying to figure out which have which excerpt I can actually read to you. So I can read to you part of, this is chapter 6, and let me just get to this part here. I'm going to read to you a little bit about the social isolation. Can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you.
Can you hear me? Yeah, okay. So this is chapter 6. This is a little bit of what we just discussed. So chapter 6, social isolation and detachment. Childhood sexual abuse is traumatic and insidious. It leaves a deep, dark black hole in the chest of its survivors. Many of us suffer a myriad of psychological, mental, and or emotional disturbances in our adult years. It can make life a living hell. One of my most problematic issues is the feeling of detachment and social isolation as a result of abuse by my brother. As I said, it began when I was 5 and he was 14. And this social isolation that I had, it worsened in my adult years. And honestly, I thought that I was going to be saved by my mother, by my family, and being supported and being believed by my family, especially my mom, when the bomb dropped. But the opposite happened. I spent 7 years of my young life tormented and believing that I would be killed if anyone knew of the truth. So when I finally defended myself and spoke out, I was stunned and devastated that my family sympathized with my brother. How could anyone think I was responsible for my brother's raping me? My mother's disbelief turned my world upside down. Surely my mom would protect me and punish him, I thought. But that wasn't the case. She beat, scolded, and punished me for telling. This caused me to completely distrust and detach from her. And so I go on in that chapter in the end.
Yeah, okay.
To say this. Because it's not a long chapter, but just to make it short. So for over 40 years, I carried and hid my shame and guilt, a shame and guilt that most childhood sexual abuse survivors carry into their adult years. I was unable to trust anyone or form lasting bonds. Social isolation and detachment were my safety, comfort, and protection. Feelings of shame, guilt, and isolation are normal for survivors to feel, but need not be a permanent fixture in our lives.
Exactly.
So that's just a little bit of chapter 6. Yeah.
Lucy, you should do more shows to get the word out about this book and what you've gone through. Because this is,
I would love
this
to.
Is just, this is just
show,
wrong.
Guys, my first show. Yeah.
Do you have a website, yeah. Lucy? Do you have a website?
Yeah. I absolutely do. It's bigbottomlose.net.
I was going to say, if you have a website.
Hold on.
I was going to say, if you have a website, I can send you the link to the show. And you can put this link up on your website and you can have people come by and listen to your story.
Absolutely. Let's do that.
Yeah.
Gary, send me that link. And I will
send
put
you
it on
link.
Social media as well. Definitely. And you can and you can also find my book. If anyone is interested, any survivors out there, loved ones or educators interested in reading my book, you can find it on Amazon. Big Bottom Blues by Lucy B. Lindner. Again, it's a short book. It's available on it's in ebook format, paperback, and next month it will be available in audio, in my voice. So you'll get the raw emotion and everything.
Lucy, don't be ashamed about writing a 64-page book, because I've got books out there that are 40 to 45 pages. So.
Oh, that is awesome to hear. You know, the thing that is awesome to hear. I've heard so many people say, "My God. 64, that's such a short book, but why is it so short?" Well, sometimes you have topics that are so intense. 64,
yeah, you have to expand it.
All people can digest.
Yeah. I do have books out there a lot longer, 200 pages. So, you know, but sometimes I think short stories can be just as compelling as a novel, you know. So it depends on what you put in it, you know. So tell us about your...
And I really do believe...
I was going to say, tell us about your
feedback.
Book.
Sorry.
Yeah, it's a delay or something.
Okay. Hello?
Tell us about your book again, and tell us where we can find it, and give us your website. Oh. And I will send you I will send you the links.
Okay, definitely. So the name of my book is Big Bottom Blues by Lucy B. Lindner. And the subtitle is A Woman's Painful Journey from Childhood Abuse and Trauma to Healing and Self-Love. You can find my book on Amazon, Amazon.com, and all the other online bookstores. You know, it's available at Barnes & Noble, Kobo, Smashwords. You can find it everywhere. You just type in Big Bottom Blues, and it will not. And my website is bigbottomblues.net.
Oh, that's easy.
And
bigbottomblues.net.
Oh, very, very. I wanted to, yeah, bigbottomblues.net. And also there is a Facebook group, which is called Big Bottom Blues by Lucy B. And anyone can join. I post some very interesting facts and figures of childhood sexual abuse and, you know, stars who had been abused who have told their stories. You know, my whole thing is about speaking up. Speaking up. We all have a voice. Every survivor needs to get up and tell his or her own story. That's the only way that we're going to make a change in our lives and other survivors' lives. People need to know. People need to be educated. Believe it or not, many people think that this doesn't really exist. It does exist. It happens to people you don't even suspect. It happens all over the world. Millions of people are affected by this. You know, you cannot be ashamed. You have to speak up.
All right, Lucy That's B. It. On the George Wilder Jr. Show. Thanks for joining me. Thanks for being on the show. Yes. We're going to do this again sometime, believe me, because your story is compelling.
Thank you for having me on your show.
No problem. Anytime you want to come back, just let me know, and we will put you back on, and we'll have some people asking you some questions and how you feel about this and how you feel about that. But totally do other shows, and because I think this could go somewhere for you. I think this could be, beneficial to you. I mean, do other shows, you know, whether it's internet radio, over-the-air radio, television. I mean, you have a compelling story, and people will listen, you know, because this is happening.
Thank
all right?
You so much.
And I want to say once again, thanks for being on the show. We do have a delay, folks. So if you're out there hearing breakups, it's because of the delay. All right, Lucy, thanks for being on the show.
Yeah.
Lucy, thanks for being on the show, and I hope to talk to you again. Bye bye. And I will send you that link.
Absolutely. Thank you so much. Have a good evening.
Bye bye. All right, Lucy B. I say Lucy B. I think her name is Lucy B. Linda. Okay, I should know. On the George Wilder Show, on the George Wilder Jr. Show, and she had a really, really compelling story, folks. We will be right back on the George Wilder Jr. Show. Stay right there where you are.
Thank you. President Obama has failed black people. Now, before I go any further, I want to say that this is not a hate message. I respect the office of the President of the United States, and I...
If we had a real president, not the president that made a speech last night where everybody fell asleep and what he said. Hey, look, look. So what happens, and what Obama was saying, President Obama, because we have to treat him with respect, right? Yes? Just think of this. So you have a president who's African-American. Good, I love that. Except less has been done for African-Americans than anybody. They're having one of the worst times they've ever had. African-American youth.
That actually ripped, not from the headlines.
Watching our guests.
Not ripped from the headlines. It actually ripped from the mouth of Tavis Smiley yesterday, who basically said the same thing.
Let's see where this conversation goes. Joining us now, Chair of the Department of African American Studies at Princeton University, Eddie Glaude Jr. He's the author of the new book, Democracy in Black, How Race Still Enslaves the American Soul. Also with us, President and CEO of the National Urban League, Mark Morial. Good to have you both on the show.
Thank you guys so much for being with us. Congratulations on the book.
Wow. Is this pub day?
Yesterday.
Oh, you'll pop right now.
Slow clap.
Let's go.
So it has to be, and we were talking to Tavis about this yesterday, it has to be so frustrating for black Americans who say, okay, we got a black president,
right?
Attorney general. I mean, go down the list.
Right.
National security advisor. And yet, we seem to be falling further and further behind every year. The stories coming out of Chicago, coming out of Ferguson, coming out of Baltimore, how do you square all of this?
Well, I think that's the great paradox, right? I mean,
right.
We thought we had turned a corner.
If I went to Princeton, I would have said, you know, the great paradox is. So go ahead.
But it seems we thought we turned a corner. We remember when he was first elected, we thought we entered a post-racial era.
Right.
But what we do know is that over the last 8 years, African Americans have fallen behind almost in every major statistical category. We see that 38% of African American children are in poverty. We know that during the housing crisis, over 240,000 homes were lost. We know that African Americans are still struggling in terms of the labor market.
Youth unemployment, especially for young black men, staggering.
Right, but that's been there for a long time.
I know it has.
It's been that way a long time.
So let me ask you. We've seen a lot of other Americans, white Americans, Hispanic Americans, see over the past couple of years,
right,
rich getting richer, poor getting poor. Is it usually just magnified, more magnified for black
absolutely.
Americans? Is that the
absolutely.
Main issue?
We usually say, as Mark would know, that when a white America catches a cold, we catch the flu.
Right.
And so this has been the case. And so in the context of this book, we want to just say.
But let me make this point. The question is, what's the baseline for comparison? Is it January 2009, when the black unemployment was higher than it is today?
Mm-hmm.
Are the problems and the exacerbation a function of the Great Recession? And the fact of the matter is, and because I've been involved in this, is that even ideas put forward by the president to alleviate this unemployment issue called the American Jobs Act, introduced in 2011, never saw the light of day because of a Senate filibuster. So there's responsibility, but there's responsibility to go around.
By the way, we're not blaming, I'm not blaming anything on President Obama in this case, because the bigger problem is, and we used to say it here all the time, since 1973, average wages have gone down.
Yeah. For everyone.
Yeah, for all Americans.
Flatline.
For all Americans, and this is a Republican problem, it's a Democratic problem. But again, though, the great paradox is so many African Americans had to believe when President Obama was elected. Okay.
But Joe, there were some of us who never bought the post-racial rhetoric.
I didn't buy it either.
But
this is, I'm not talking about what people were saying in Manhattan. I was talking about what people were saying in Ferguson, what they were saying across America the night that President Obama won.
Right, and folks were celebrating, and then they woke up to foreclosure. Many of them woke up to foreclosure notices on their homes. And what I say in the book is I say that there's something that we have to confront honestly, and that's the value gap. I call it the value gap.
gap.
Right.
And the value gap is this fundamental belief, and we have to look at this squarely in the face, that in this country that's committed to democracy, that for so much of our history, white people have been valued more than black folk. White people have been valued more than others. And to the extent that is true, under all conditions, no matter what the inputs are, the outputs will be the same.
Right.
So even if you get an African-American in the White House, even if you get an African-American in the White House, in 2008 there was the Great Recession, but for black folk, I call it the Great Black Depression. And folks are talking about recovery right now, but we haven't recovered.
Well, it's going to require...
At the start of your book, and even in the introduction,
right.
I mean, you're very tough on Barack Obama. Tough on Jimmy Carter. You're tough on Bill Clinton.
I call them all confidence men.
With Barack Obama, though, is it your feeling that he just wasn't black enough?
No, not at all. I just say we green screened him. Right. We made him what we wanted him to be. We wanted him to be the anti-war candidate. We wanted him to be the progressive savior. We wanted him to be the person who would resolve all of our country's history.
What did you want him to do that he hasn't tried to do?
I wanted him to be bolder.
But you know,
I wanted him to be bolder. I wanted him to be progressive. I didn't want him to be just simply a centrist liberal.
This is the problem. This is the problem. We don't elect emperors. We don't elect leaders that can rule by decree or edict. We elect a president who manages a democracy with three branches of government.
Of course.
We lost ground on the Voting Rights Act, not because of Barack Obama, but because of a recalcitrant Supreme Court.
And so, if we're going to have a complete discussion. At the same time, though, Mark, you say this. President Obama, his first couple of years, had an overwhelming majority of Democrats running the House and the Senate, could have passed so many things that he's been blaming Republicans not passed now.
But the problem is,
you're obsessing about Barack Obama.
No, I'm not. You all are talking about Barack Obama.
No, we're not.
We're trying to have a conversation
about the past 40, 50 years.
Right. Yeah.
And
so what about Bush? What about Reagan? What about the impact that they had also? So you got to look at all of it.
And I do that in the book.
Yeah.
I do that in the book.
But again, the past 40 or 50 years. I'm trying to get at the heart of this, though.
Right.
What do we do moving forward? What happens next?
Right.
What was not done over the past 8 years, over the past 80 years,
right,
that our next president needs
to
do?
I say in the book we need a revolution of value, reprising Dr. King's beautiful language from his book, Where Do We Go From Here? What is a revolution of value? We need to change how we view government, and we change how we view government by changing our demands of government. We need to change how we view black people. We're not lazy. Right, we're not sitting out around not wishing for the American dream, but we change how we view black people by changing how we view white people in this country. They're not valued more than others. That's what Black Lives Matter is all about. We know we matter. The point is that white folk don't matter more. Right? And the last thing we need to do is change what ultimately matters for us. We can't be greedy. We can't be selfish. We can't be narcissistic. So we see all of the exciting energy around Bernie Sanders. That's just simply Occupy, making itself known in a political campaign. And so part of what we need to do is challenge at the very heart of what has happened in this country, and that is greed has overtaken democracy. And so this is what this book is all about.
So Eddie, you know, I actually, a couple of weeks ago when the debate about Woodrow Wilson was going
on,
I said we need to have an hour conversation. We need to have a round table, and we need to have thought leaders come in and talk about that. I'm going to invite both of you guys back. I know we're in the middle of a busy political season. We need to devote at least an hour.
All right. I want to thank my guest, Lucy B. Linda, calling from overseas, out of the country, put it this way. She wasn't in America. She was calling from another country. I can't think of it. The UK. I'm not sure. But anyway, I'm sorry about it if her interview was breaking up on you. Her phone was breaking up. It could have been my equipment. I don't know, but things like that happen. We're having bad weather, cold weather. That could have affected it a little bit. But anyway, I want to thank her for being on the show. I'm hoping to talk to her again. Her situation that she lived through when she was 11 years old was just, I mean, it was just a totally real. I mean, it was surreal. And I can agree with her and share with her on haunting memories of your past. You know, they will haunt your dreams. And because I'm a witness to that, I don't want to discuss my situation because it's all in my books. Just go check them out. Once again, I want to thank author. She's not young author. I mean, she's not that young. Anyway, she's 49. But anyway, we're going to be talking to her again. So you just keep it tuned to George Waldo Jr.'s show. We always have some fantastic people on the show, people from all over the world, not just Chicago, not just Illinois, not just America, but all over the world. And that's one of the things I love about this show. We get interesting people because, you know, I have people on the show where, you know, you learn something, I learn something. That's the way it's supposed to be. And that's one of the ways, one of the many ways of making the world a better place, getting your story out there, letting people know what's going on. She's right. This is happening. Abuse is happening every day, every minute, every hour, every second. Even while I'm on the air right here telling you about it, we're telling you about it, it's happening right here. And it's happening as I tell you. And it is. It's going on. It's real. And we want to try and put a nail in it. We want to try to stop it. But, you know, we need a lot of help. You know, if you're being abused or you're being misused physically, mentally, verbally, call somebody, tell somebody, get your story out there. Don't just sit and just take it because you're trying to tell other people about it and they don't believe you. They're blaming you. And thinking that the perpetrator is very innocent. If something's happening to you, if something's tell somebody or it will keep on happening. And more time than most, if you don't let somebody know what's going on, especially when it pertains to abuse, you could wind up dead. Abusers, once they start abusing, they don't quit. They keep on abusing. They keep on abusing until the person, the victim, is dead. So if you are being abused, if you know someone who's being abused physically, mentally, verbally, whatever, woman, man, child, if you know someone who's being abused, say something, contact somebody. You may be able to save your life or someone else's life. All right, you've been listening to the George Waldo Jr. Show on Blog Talk Radio, and we have had a great show so far, folks. It has been wonderful. Yeah, it has been wonderful. All right, it's 16 degrees in Chicago. It's straight up 7:10, 16 degrees. Weather-wise, I've just got through saying, folks, it's cold. It's 16 in Chicago, but they saying it feel like it's single digit. And it does. And if it is cold where you are and you have to be out there in that cold, make sure you bundle up. You gotta cover up. I understand that some of you people out there who want to walk the streets, you want to look cute so you don't wear nothing on your head. You want to shake, you want to shake your butt and you don't want to cover up your rear. You're going to freeze. I've even seen some senior citizens strolling down the sidewalk or, you know, barely dressed, at least I'm going to say this. They had nothing on their heads. Put it that way. Cover up out here. You can get sick, especially if you hadn't had your flu shot so far. And if you haven't had your flu shot, make sure you get it because this cold weather is not joking. It's freezing. I mean, you could freeze your ass off. it is cold. I mean, it is dangerously cold, you know, and it's not even winter yet. It's officially, it's still spring by the calendar. Anyway, by the calendar, but by the looks of it outside, it's totally winter. So stay safe in the cold, folks. It's just, if you don't have to be out there, don't go out there, you know, so. Alrighty, Bruce Rauner, the governor of Illinois, saying that the budget plays a role in the murder rate in Chicago. I don't know how he may be right about that. I mean, there may be some validity to that. But this is his way, by him saying that and me quoting him, that no budget in the state of Illinois plays a role in the murder rate. That tells me that he's still trying to blame the legislature. Basically, what he's saying when he said that is, folks, you want to stop the crime, then pass my reforms. Get Michael Madigan and the rest of the lawmakers in the Illinois House to accept my reforms, and then we can lower crime. You know, so that's all that is. I mean, when you're listening to Bruce Rauner, you have to read between the lines. Because now when he's talking, now that he's saying that no budget plays a role in the high murder rate, he's trying to get all the mothers and the fathers who have had their kids shot down in the streets, black on black crime, to say that it's Michael Madigan's fault because he will not negotiate a budget with me. You have to read between the lines of these slime ass politicians. You know, Bruce Rauner doesn't give two shits about the crime in the city of Chicago. He cares about controlling the legislature, the schools, the colleges, the universities. This is what he wants to control, and he can't. So he's trying everything he can to get the people of Illinois to turn against the Democrats in the legislature. It didn't work during the election. Not in Illinois, it did not. So he's still trying it. He's still at it. He's using his money. Throwing his money here, there at politicians. A lot of the politicians that he threw his money at threw his money to the last election, a lot of these guys lost. It should tell him that his money is not going to get him control of Illinois. It's not. People going to vote. People going to vote his ass straight out. Because as I just mentioned earlier, the guy's been in office 3 years and he does not have one legitimate accomplishment for the people of the state of Illinois. He has zero accomplishments. Oh, he has all kinds of accomplishments when it comes to budget cutting. I know he's cutting all these programs that's affecting people, workers, part-time workers, low-wage workers. He doesn't want anything to do with raising the minimum wage. That ain't going to happen. That's why you don't hear any more talk about it. There's no more talk about it. That's a done deal. The minimum wage in the state of Illinois is $8.25. And they wanted to, the Democrats wanted raised, but they know with a Republican governor, that's not going to happen. It is not going to happen with Bruce Rauner. So you don't even hear any talk about raising the minimum wage statewide in Illinois, because they, with a Republican governor like Bruce Rauner, an asshole, it's not going to happen ever. You know, in fact, he wants to lower the minimum wage. He thinks $8.25 is too much. And I can go further. He actually wants to eliminate it, take it away, take the minimum wage away. He figures by doing this, it will help businesses to stay and grow in Illinois, you know, and busting unions, okay? I mean, if you gave this guy all of that, workers would have no right. Employers could pay the workers any amount of money that they want to. They could fire the worker at any for any infraction, no matter how small or tiny, or they can just fire the employee just because their employees has his apron on backwards or something. Illinois needs unions. And I think most of the state workers, I believe there are 65 to 70,000 state workers in the state of Illinois. And they're all in unions. Rauner, this Republican governor, doesn't like that. He's trying to get you to turn against your own union because he hates them. He can't stand them. Rahm Emanuel bends over backwards for the unions. He gives these unions everything they ask for. And sometimes I think that some of these unions do not deserve it, but Rahm Emanuel is a bleeding heart liberal. That's what happens. All right, you've been listening to the George Wilder Jr. Show on Blog Talk Radio, folks. We will be right back. We're going to do this if we can. Okay. Great show. Folks, this is just crazy. Now what kind of person, this is the Christmas season, okay? What kind of person would go to a mall where you can find lots of Santa Clauses? I think I said plural, didn't I? You can go to a mall and find lots of Santa Clauses. And you know, they're picking up kids, putting the kids on their lap and asking the children, what do they want for Christmas? You know, but what kind of person goes to a mall and tells all the children, most of the children inside that mall who are waiting to sit on Santa's lap, that there is no Santa Claus? Yeah. This is a pastor, someone of the church, someone of the cloth, goes to a mall and tells kids Santa is not real. I just think that's absurd. I think that's But these pastors, these ministers and bishops, they're going to try to find some kind of clause in the Bible that says that's okay for someone like him to do. But that's crazy. I mean, why go and just kill the dreams of small children? Eventually, they're going to find out the truth anyway as they grow older. I think a lot of us, when we were, 9, 10, sometimes younger, we believed in Santa. I know I did. I truly did. A lot of us. But as we grow older, grow up, go to school and high school and Other things we learn out that there is no Santa, but the time that we believed that there was a Santa, it made us feel good. It made us feel great about it. It made us dream. Wow, we're going to get this. He's going to bring toys and all this kind of thing. He's going to come down the chimney. His reindeer is going to be flying across the sky, the night skies. And just to have someone just, you know, blow that all apart, you know, go to a mall and tell young children that there is no Santa Claus when they're looking at Santa directly before them, in front of them. That's just mean and nasty and cruel to tell small children that there is no Santa Claus. I know some people out there are going to say, well, George, he's telling the truth. Yeah, but these are babies. These are children. Everybody should have these type of dreams and beliefs until that's just like telling someone. We all know that the tooth fairy is not real. I think I knew that from the get-go. Because I think I saw my mother or father come in there and put some money under the pillow. I said, no, you can't fool me with that. I know there's no tooth fairy. But I actually thought that there was a Santa. My kids, they even thought that there was a Santa. You know, but I mean, he doesn't believe now. So, you know, but he did. He did. We all did, I think. You know, so that's just wrong. This is in Texas. Pastor goes to the mall, tells kids Santa isn't real. All right. You've been listening to the George Wilder Jr. Show. We got about how many more? About maybe around 7 or 8 minutes left into the show. It's been a great show. It's been a wonderful show. It is cold out there, folks. It is cold. Oh, yeah. I wanted to say that the Congress is trying to investigate Donald Trump ties with Russia. And I believe that. I do believe that Russia played a part in getting this guy elected. Yeah, I mean, nobody in their right mind would have voted for Donald Trump. A lot of people did. I'm not saying they weren't in their right minds when they did it, but, you know, this guy is dangerous. He's loony. He's an imbecile. You know, I mean, you can call me what you want. You can disagree with that. I don't care. That's your prerogative. But from my standpoint, Donald Trump is totally, totally unfit for the job. And he shows it every day. You know, he's picking people to be in his cabinet. And every one of these son of a bitches that he has picked, they have questionable ties. And we will talk about that tomorrow on the George Wilder Jr. Show. Folks, thanks for being here. We're not gone yet. We got about 4 or 5 more minutes into the show. So we're going to do this right quick. You got it?
Heaven help the child who never had a home. Heaven help the girl who walks the streets alone. Heaven help the roses if the bombs begin to fall. Heaven help the black man if he struggles one more day. Heaven help the white man if he turns back away. Heaven help the man who kicks the man who has a crawl. Heaven help us all.
Heaven help us all.
a troubled world, I pray the Lord to keep hatred from the mighty and the mighty from the small.
All right, you've been listening to the George Wilder Jr. Show on Block Talk Radio. Folks, it is dangerously cold out there. If you go out there, make sure you bundle up. If you see anybody out there that's homeless, try to help and get them off to a shelter, because you don't want to see people freezing their asses out in the cold because they refused to go somewhere where it's warm. And there's plenty of shelters, warming shelters in Chicago and around America. Nobody has to. All right. Okay. They're just set 90 seconds. Nobody has to sleep out in the cold. Nobody has to be walking out in the cold. Nobody, you know, there's warming centers all over the place, you know, so get inside of a warming center. Best of all, if you have an apartment or a house or a condominium, stay inside if you don't have to go out. But for those out there who have to be out there, bundle up. All right, you've been listening to the George Radio. They just told me I had 60 seconds left, folks. So I hope you guys join me tomorrow. I hope you had a great time. I know I did. I know I did. Bye-bye, folks, and I hope you join me tomorrow. The George Wilder Jr. Show is off the air.